Welcome to NTTA's The Road Trip podcast. I'm your host, Michael Ray, NTTA's Media Relations Manager. In each episode, we'll talk with experts inside and outside our organization and explore innovations, best practices, and other topics related to transportation. Today, we are going to focus on preventative measures for wrong-way driving. It is of great interest to both the media and the public at large. So our guest today, Eric Hemphill, he's NTTA's Director of Traffic and Incident Management. Tim Grix manages our Safety Operations Center. We call it the SOC around the building, but it's a massive 911 dispatch operations center. And Kareem Williams, he oversees NTTA's free, and I do emphasize free, roadside service program. He's out there on the front lines dealing with vehicles on the roadway. We call that Roadside Safety Services, and we call it RSS for a while. So let's go. Let's talk about specifically the topic of wrong-way drivers. So, Eric, I'll throw it to you since you're the boss. I've worked with you on this subject quite a bit. You've talked to the media, to experts. What's the latest in the field of combating wrong-way driving?
Well, thanks, Michael. Yeah, the latest in the field of combating wrong-way driving is just continuing the push to technology. On the horizon, we have connected vehicle technology and wrong-way driving. We are working on a location to basically pick up a car that is going the wrong way and then tell the other smart cars in the area to broadcast a message to them, to heads-up display, that there's a wrong-way driver reported. As part of that, we'll have displays in our courtesy patrol, the RSS, the Safety Service Patrol trucks, and in some of the state trooper cars that will also tell them that, hey, there's a wrong-way driver reported. So not only will we get an alert, we'll start broadcasting it out to others that have smart vehicles. So, but that's just the latest. A little bit, we've done thermal cameras, the thermal imaging cameras. So you may, Michael, as you mentioned, we worked together a while back. We did try detecting wrong-way drivers using our camera system that we have out there. We have a smart camera system that detects vehicles on the side of the road, large things in the lanes of traffic. Mm-hmm. So we thought we could program them and say, hey, why can't you pick up something going the wrong way? We worked on some algorithms, plugged it in there, but it turned, come to find out that a standard camera, if you ever shined a flashlight at a camera or taken a picture where the flash is in a mirror, you understand why. The big headlight glare basically just messed up the algorithm in the camera. It couldn't see. It was a wrong-way driver going against our cameras. The headlights flash in it. Well, the good news is thermal camera imaging doesn't see the light. It sees heat. And if a car is running, you've got heat. So essentially, the thermal camera just looks for that heat signature going the wrong way and alert our safety operations center.
One of the things I want to talk about, too, with you, Tim, is having talked about everything we just have, it must be a different feeling within the safety ops center when it gets to be overnight because of the predominance of that's when we have the drivers who are impaired or the weekends. What's the feeling like for the folks who are manning the dispatch, who are watching the cameras? What is it like in the safety operations center when it gets to be deep night?
It's very, very tense, especially on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. We have the big wrong way message sign that flashes. When that light does go off, it's high alert. Everybody follows that protocol. They start looking. They're eyes on cameras, eyes on wall, making the notifications. And hopefully we can try to prevent something. Hopefully we can get a DPS trooper there to stop this guy, or if we can get local agencies there to stop this guy. But staff is in here. It's very tense. I mean, everybody is talking. It's very verbal. It gets very loud in here, what people see, what they can find, and just basically alerting everybody so we can get the message out, not just to DPS, but also to Kareem's team, just for safety reasons.
So I guess that's when the teamwork and working together for a while has kind of helped itself. There must be a lot of verbal cues, a lot of verbal shorthand during a high-stress incident like that for you guys.
There is, sir. And the worst thing is actually seeing if there is a crash. because we have basically just witnessed somebody's worst day, and not just that person's worst day, but maybe also potential family members when the department, when the DPS troopers go there and make a notification. So my staff sit back, they have to look at this, they get to watch it, and it's very humbling, it's very tense for them.
Kareen, you've been quiet, as you often are, but you're out there on the front lines. Have any of our RSS operators encountered any of these wrong-way drivers? You said you patrol the roadways. Have you ever come in contact with them before anybody even gets a chance to call them in?
Oh, yes, we have. The RSS division is 24/7, 365, just like the SOC. So every minute of the day, we've got an operator out there on every system that NTTA has patrolling the roadways. And if we've come across people who are driving the wrong way, and we immediately can notify the SOC before any technology can pick them up.
Well, that's a great service. And again, you're kind of the eyes on the system out there. And you point out that you don't just sit waiting on something to happen. You're patrolling the roadway, kind of looking for danger. So that's a great aspect of what you guys do for the system.
Every one of our wrong-way drivers has been in a crash, has been impaired, either intoxicated or on drugs. And so one of the things that Kareem's team, fortunately or unfortunately, have come upon at different times are intoxicated drivers either stranded in the middle of the road or parked on the shoulder. And they've been able to summons and keep them there and summons DPS, the state troopers, to come take care of that. And so, you know, you tell me, okay, yeah, but they were going the correct direction when you stopped them. People are shocked to know, as we start to do more research, that one third of the wrong way drivers, that's basically, you know, a little over 3 in 10, are going the correct direction on our roadway. They never come up the exit ramp the wrong way. We've done lowered signs on exit ramps. We've done pavement markings. We've done more red striping. We've done flashing lights on exit ramps. And that's great. But when you're talking about a third of the drivers, never see those because they come the right direction. And then just simply U-turn to go the wrong direction on our roadways. So stopping behind some of those intoxicated individuals and getting them stopped and keeping them there until state troopers get there, I tell Kareem and his team that they're essentially stopping a potential wrong-way driver, because we don't know that that person's not going to just all of a sudden turn around and go the other direction.
Do you drill for this? Is this something you can prepare for, or is this a learned experience?
But, yes, the SOC does plenty of drilling to try to make it quick and fast, because every second counts when it's a wrong-way driver.
I totally agree with what Eric's saying. We have a training process. We do train on this. We do train on wrong-way drivers. We can set off the message inside the center to do our training to make it realistic for our staff so they can be prepared when one does happen.
And when I say there's flashing lights, there is a big board up there. Imagine 21 72-inch monitors stacked side by side by side in a rectangle pattern. Right below it is about a 1 foot tall sign that's about 30 foot long that starts flashing wrong way driver. So it does get the attention of everybody in the room, not only the person monitoring the alerts. So, yeah, you've got this big flashing wrong way sign. I mean, it's a foot tall. It's flashing wrong way red at you. The situation starts to get tense. But the good news is we have somebody monitoring a specific computer that has all alerts and alarms on it. So the second that thing pops, that alert and alarm is popping right at that location. So if we get a wrong-way driver detection, the SOC staff knows where to start. Tim is right. It gets confusing. People call 911. They don't exactly know where they're at. They might be calling 911. But remember, if you're traveling 60 miles an hour, you look up, you're a mile away from where you were. So we ask you for a cross street. That wrong-way driver is going 60 miles an hour the opposite direction. And so, you know, you're a couple miles away once we even get the initial call.
Eric mentioned earlier that, Kareem, you've come upon, our RSS people in general have come upon folks who are impaired on the side of the roadway. Are there certain cues that you see as you pull up on a driver like that? Can you almost tell before you get to the vehicle that you're dealing with somebody who should not be driving?
Well, we teach our team to be very observant. right? You have to know your surroundings. You have to be able to observe things, tell when something's wrong. And be honest with you, a lot of the times it's just common sense. You walk up to a car and you'll see somebody in there passed out, head against the glass, vehicle's still in drive with their foot on a brake. You know something's going on. That's not normally what somebody would do. We've seen people pull over in a fashion where they're pull over at an angle, you know, where the car just veered off, or they'll be up against a barrier or something like that. Or they'll just stop in the middle of the lane of traffic. They just completely stop in the lane of traffic and we'll pull behind them. So anytime we see something that's out of the norm, we contact the appropriate authorities and get help out there. We secure the scene to keep the traveling motorists safe from the incident that we're working.
So let me ask you the question that I'm always asked, and I think the media asks it, the public at large, it's the first question they ask. Hey, have you guys ever thought about using spikes? You know, like when you go to get a rental car and you leave the lot and they've got those metal spikes that you drive over, and if you go the wrong way, they pop the tires. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, I have heard that. We've heard that since we formed our Wrong Way Driver Task Force in 2009. That was one of the first and many suggestions we get just about every time we have a wrong way driver. And in theory, that sounds great, but I will tell you that me personally, when I'm driving out of those lots, and I know a lot of people, you're going 5, 6, 7 miles an hour, and the first time you go roll over those, you stop for a second to see if they've popped your tires. You're going the correct direction, and you know that. And you're going 5 to 10 miles an hour, yet you're still nervous to drive over that. Now imagine that at 70 miles an hour. So if you are going the correct direction at 70 miles an hour, we've shown just a little small pothole, quarter of an inch, half an inch can take a tire out and blow it. So having those spikes out there permanently will definitely damage the right way drivers going the correct direction. Even if it doesn't damage them, if you see something metal laying across the road, you're going to slow down, just the natural reaction, and no telling what you could do and cause harm to others. So versions of that we've heard is, well, why don't you make them so they deploy when there is a wrong way driver detection detected and they're in the ground, they deploy. Well, that's wonderful if you have a perfectly clean environment that has no dirt, dust, or debris where a rock could get in and jam it, so it either doesn't go back down or doesn't pop up. Or more importantly, we actually have emergency services that will go the wrong direction down a ramp to get to a crash. Well, if we had spikes that popped up or spikes that were on the ground, we would then slow paramedics getting to a crash, which could potentially be life-threatening. So yes, there's a number of other reasons we don't use spike strips, but those are the big ones.
Well, those are pretty significant reasons, and I know from working with you in the past, I think there have been actual studies in California that kind of laid out all the things that you just said. These are the reasons why not. So I do want to tell people, I know that you and your department have looked at this for many years, and it's something that you've certainly considered, but for the reasons you just spelled out, we've not decided to go that route. Well, I guess I'll do a toss-up question and see who wants to answer this. Perhaps you all have thoughts on this, but if a customer is on the roadway, if any of us are on the roadway and we're faced with a message sign that a vehicle's coming the wrong way, or we happen to spot it in the distance, what's the right thing to do?
Michael, I'll jump in on this one at first. So the right thing to do is watch when you drive. A lot of the wrong way drivers are occurring overnight, after the bars close, we call it, basically from, midnight to 4 in the morning, even as early as 11, but, they're pretty much the vast majority of them are midnight to 4 a.m. And then it kind of concentrates around the 1 to 2 a.m. Time frame. So only go out if you have to. And I understand people work night shifts and things like that. We're 24/7 and we're out there. So a few tips to try to avoid it in the first place are, don't typically drive in the left lane. It's your left lane. It's the wrong way driver's right lane and their slow lane. So keep in mind they are intoxicated. So the first thing in their mind is to try to avoid any attention to themselves. So they're not going to drive in the fast lane. So the vast majority of them.
They're trying to be in their own impaired mind as safe as they can possibly be while they attempt to get home.
Correct. It's a little twisted logic that I'm going to drink and drive, and that was a smart thing to do. But you know what? If I'm going to do it, I'm going to try to be as inconspicuous as I can. I'm going to drive in the right lane. Well, unfortunately, going the wrong direction, that is the left lane or the fast lane. So, but one of the other big tips that I keep pointing out is always keep your head up. You know, we talk about distracted driving. Don't be on your phone. If you're looking down for just a second, imagine you're going 70 miles an hour or 60 or whatever. You know, you're traveling a good distance every minute you've gone a mile, right? So you're traveling like the football field in seconds. So you look down at that text and that person's coming at you at the same rate of speed. And so what is just a moment to you is a long time between two cars coming together that fast. So hey, don't text and drive. Don't drive distracted. Don't drink and drive. But if you are out on the roadway and you are at that midnight and you got to be, give yourself extra distance between the cars. What we see in a lot of our crashes is the first car can see the wrong way driver coming. They swerve out of the way. The second car that was way too close to the first car has no time to react. And unfortunately, they're the ones that are struck. So the 2 second rule that you've all learned when you're in driver ed school doesn't really work at night. You need to give lots more seconds. You need to give as much room as you can between you and that car in front of you, because they will swerve out of the way. And whatever time they swerve out of the way, that's your only reaction time. So give plenty of distance.
Kareem, you mentioned you and your teammates. When it gets to be deep nights, do you have different practices? You watch out for each other? How does that work?
Oh, definitely. NTTA is one big family. So we all look out for each other, regardless of which department you're in. And during those times of night where we know that's predominantly the time where a runway crash would most likely occur, our team is on edge. But we know that the Safety Operations Center is watching out for us via the cameras, and with their communication, they'll alert us the second something happens. And when it does, our guys are able to take action. We check on each other as well throughout the night. We adjust our route so we can kind of cover each other a little bit better. And unfortunately, if a wrong-way accident does occur, because RSS is out there patrolling 24/7, we more than likely will be the first on scene for any incident. So our guys are seeing firsthand what's going on, you know, and their primary goal when they arrive on scene is first to make the area safe, because we know we're going to have first responders en route, but we have to make the area safe so that another incident doesn't occur right after that. And once we do have the scene safe, we check on the people who are involved. And we hold the scene down until first responders can get there. But visually seeing that and being boots on the ground and being right there in the moment, it's a lot. It is a lot. And we definitely take our hats off to the team members who are out there dealing with that on an everyday basis, whether responding to just a regular crash that occurred, whether responding to a motor assist on the side of the road, or if it is something like a wrong-way crash.
Well, and we probably should mention that we're talking about specific incidents, and this is anything but common. It does tend to catch media attention. It does tend to be publicized quite a bit. So it might feel that way more than not, but we are working to reduce that number to zero with our signage and the various things we do. I know I speak for you, Eric, when I say it's something that we think about preventing all of the time. When we go to work each day.
Right. Good point, Michael. I think part of what you mentioned is such a tiny fraction of our tiny fraction, a very small percentage of the number of crashes we have overall. It's 1% or less. But as you mentioned, they are typically dramatic because they are two high speed cars going head to head, but they're also more severe than a typical crash. So it is our goal every day. NTTA is involved in several national wrong-way driver panels. So we have our feelers out, not only what we do and what the state of Texas is doing and what our partners in Texas are doing. We interact on a regular basis as part of two national panels with what goes on in the rest of the country. So we are looking for best practices. But you can also see from Tim and Kareem why wrong way driving irritates us and why just drinking and driving irritates us in general, because you're getting behind the wheel after having a few beers and think you're okay. But not only Could you impact somebody else? You're impacting all the first responders, all the SOC, all the RSS team that have to witness the destruction you created by drinking and driving.
Well, I think the thing you've pointed out, and I know you deal with a lot, is as you said earlier, virtually every person involved in this is impaired in one way or another. And communicating with somebody who's already impaired, that's the challenge. The sad fact is that it's very difficult to reach somebody who is badly impaired.
Right. And that's why we've lowered our signs. Part of what we did was to lower wrong way driver and do not enter signs. And sounds strange to lower a sign to get attention, but the studies have shown that they are looking lower and you're looking for cues to where you should be. So we lowered the signs. The NCTA pushed the envelope a little bit and did 2 feet. And that 3 to 2 doesn't sound like a big difference. But in Texas, with headlight height being 24 inches to 54 inches legal, we put the entire do not enter sign within your headlights. So that makes the sign twice as bright when it gets around the corner. So that 1 foot difference makes the sign twice as bright, as you said, trying to get their visual cues. And we've even gone now to, we talked about this a little bit, was flashing signs. They're activated by the loops. Signs start flashing. They get your attention when they flash because they're not there, and then all of a sudden they show up. Trying to get the attention of somebody that's intoxicated is difficult, and get them to make a maneuver, especially when a third of them are U-turning. What gives them the cue to U-turn, and how do we get them turned around and stopped from doing the U-turn? And it all typically boils back to, as you mentioned, driving intoxicated. So part of our goal is to stop it before it ever starts. And that's why we've partnered with folks. We partner with the state troopers and do DWI patrols. We've partnered with some of our partner counties to do DWI patrols to stop it before it starts. And then we've partnered with MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, for some campaigns to help deter drinking and driving.
Well, thank you for the look at it today. We've had an extensive look. It's good to see all that's being done to prevent this and to make even more effective alert systems in the future. So I do want to thank our guests today. Again, Eric Hemphill, Tim Grix, Kareem Williams, all of the North Texas Tollway Authority.
You've shared some valuable information. Thank you. And some great takeaways for our listeners as well. We thank everyone who's listening, too. Remember, you can share your feedback and topic ideas at MREY@ntta.org. Thank you, and drive safely.